So Wilmoth asks, to whom does one return the grace? And the answer is to the source, the man, the businessman, who did to another what the Divine One had done to him. How did he return it to that Divine One? Well, because he returned it to the source of all philanthropy. That's how he returned it to the philanthropist, because he returned it to the source of all philanthropy and grace, and he kept the divine impulse that initially came to him, he kept it moving and acting and alive and potent in the world. You take what you get. Your cup is filled, pour it out. Don't keep it and hoard it. Your cup is filled, pour it out. Mother Jenny used to say, how do I get energy? By expending energy. How do you live longer? By living. Not by rolling up and trying to save every ounce you have. That's what old people do. They say, oh, I'm too tired to do this, I'm too tired to do that. Mother Jenny got up and did everything herself. She wouldn't let anybody do anything for her. And that's one of the reasons she lived so long. And she was so effective and such a great teacher. She constantly gave, she poured forth. It is sacrificial. Life is sacrificial. Raising a child teaches you that. This is the grace at meal that we say at our home. It has these elements. First, an acknowledgement of receiving divine grace with a thanksgiving, not just for this food, but for all things. Right use of the grace by directing it outward, and then at the meal, and the intention to keep it alive and potent in the world. And then for the meal, you must also bless the food that you are intaking with this grace. Because by blessing the food, you change the vibration of that food. You elevate it. It's like preparing the pilgrims to enter the city. You must bless the food that comes into your body. You must bless anything you intake, anything you breathe, anything you drink, anything you do. Because when you eat, you're not just eating proteins and sugars. You're also eating magnetic fluids and vital ethers and all kinds of other things. And these forces are being replenished. It's just as in breathing. You don't replenish your prana and your magnetic parts of your body and the ethers by just breathing in and breathing out. You have to breathe in and hold it and let it out. And the way that the elemental of your body receives, all dimensions of the elemental receive nourishment from the food you eat, is not just wolfing it down and chewing a few bites and swallowing it. That will not do it. You have to have it in your mouth, and you have to taste it and smell it, and like a gourmet, you have to sense your way into the food. Then it nourishes all the other elements of your elemental. But if you don't do it that way, if you don't even taste your food, and people that have very low quality taste, they can't tell the difference between a McDonald's hamburger and a great meal or something like that, are people that are not even nourishing that part of their existence. Appreciation of art, of music, of food, of all these things, sensory appreciation, going deeply into the senses and getting so you can really taste the higher octaves and the higher qualities of these things is the means through which these etheric etheric parts of the body are nourished. So the elements that carry this grace, the food that you're going to intake, which means the elements that are coming in are blessed, which means that you are thanking them, you are honoring them, and you are preparing them, and you are elevating them to become part of your city, of you. And you are, this is your temple of God. You are a temple of the Holy Spirit. You are a temple of God. You daily serve need in the world in whatever way you do. And you reaffirm your commitment to this work, which you acknowledge is able to be done only by virtue of divine grace that flows into you and animates you. So, to summarize, food must be prepared and taken and shared and eaten with what I call the Eucharistic view. All food must be, you have to understand consciously what you're doing, you have to do it consciously, you have to do it honoringly and appreciatively, and with the intent of using what you get from this for the service of whatever you do in the world. For, that is, you're moving that impulse out into the world. That's the grace that's being returned. And there are other forms of ingestion that the Eucharistic view applies to. It's not just eating, it's all forms of psychonoetic ingestion, for impressions and suggestions and sounds and sights and fragrances. All these are taken in. You can inhale things. The sumo wrestler looks at his opponent and he inhales the opponent, and that's how he knows how he's going to move before he moves. There's a psychic element. The nose is connected, the sense of smell, a higher octave of that with the intuitive sense. And it's through fragrance that things are open to you. Fragrances teach you things. They open you and do wonderful things for you. You have to take all things in through careful discrimination with consciousness and with Eucharist for the grace received, and what enters in must be blessed and honored and introduced in a sacred way. Now, in terms of breath and breathing, I do a whole separate lecture on that, but this is part of the whole concept of this one of these four elements of communion and merging. And because when you do this, when you eat this way, you are conjoining yourself with the food. You are aware of the fact that you are performing a marriage. You are taking into yourself and conjoining and communing and merging with what you eat. This is a merging practice and a communion practice. The communion and merging practices, which are generally I call conjunctions, are absolutely necessary ways, practices you must get going in your life before you can have communion, communication with elementals and the elemental world and the world of nature and nature spirit. Now the whole category of moving. I call this Eucharistic motion. I introduced you to the blessing walk before. When you walk upon the earth, you imprint the earth with your vibrations, whether you know it or not. If you're angry, you put bad vibrations into the earth. When you're joyful and blissful, you put good vibrations. Well, you can be conscious about this. Now, let me say, before one is able to feel gratitude, which is a very high and divine feeling, one has to become conscious about it. You don't feel gratitude usually without becoming conscious. In the same way, you don't feel bliss without preparing yourself for it. Bliss doesn't come upon you and hit you like a hammer. Bliss is not something that's just a sort of a little booby trap waiting for you. Same with gratitude and so on. You have to prepare your view and your consciousness so that you can feel these divine feelings, because these are divine feelings that purify you. Gratitude is one of the greatest feelings, and very few people have it. Very few people know how to feel it. Bliss is something that Westerners shy away from. They start to feel a little of it, and oh, they close down. They get scared. They can't hold it. Bliss, these are things you should open yourself to experiencing, and you should grab onto and hold onto when they do come. Now, every time you walk over the earth or its forms of concrete expression, which can be roads and highways and buildings that are made out of the things of the earth, you impress that with who and what you are, with your beingness. Okay, your beingness can be rather neutral, as it is most of the time with most human beings. It can be vacuous. It can have a lot of darkness. It can have anger in it, so on. When you do the blessing walk, you consciously decide by visualizing that you're going to impress only blessing. And you visualize coming out of the soles of your feet golden energy. Remember this, blessing is visualized as golden. Golden is blessing. And what does blessing mean? Blessing means the pure nectar of divine love. That is blessing. And it contains in it all healing, all evolution, all nurture, all comfort. Blessing is just a huge word. And blessing means, and the best way to comprehend it and the best way to deal with it, to work with it, is as a golden energy proceeds from the heart. Now you imagine this golden energy coming out of the soles of your feet and the palms of your hands as you walk. It imprints into the earth. Each splash of gold that you leave as you walk, like a footprint, quickly expands and permeates all the environment. So that you can visualize in your mind's eye behind you as you walk, everything is turning golden. All the earth is turning golden. Out of your hands, you can put it around like this. You can put your left hand in your hand and you can bless things. You can put both hands up and bless things. Put them into your wings. Here are your wings up here. Don't do it down here. Up here are the wings. Put them into that energy here. You can, everything you hear can be blessed. Just the things that you become aware of, the things that you smell, and everything you see, you can imagine, you can visualize as turning golden, the sky and the trees. As I've said before, Master Ivanhoff, he says, when you get up in the morning, go out and greet everything. Greet the trees and the sun and the birds and everything. Be kind to them, nice to them, talk to them like an old lady talks to her plants. you must understand that they're conscious. All life is conscious. Everything is conscious. Your automobile is conscious. It's a form. It has things in it that are conscious on a certain level. Everything is conscious. So relate to it as though everything is alive and everything deserves respect and everything's like a little animal, at least, you know. And so the blessing walk, we discussed before. I've got a lot of directions into it. But the blessing walk is just one concrete example of what I call the blessing way. Now, this is not to be confused with the Navajo blessing way, which isn't that just a blessing ceremony. The blessing way is a whole attitude towards being and life, life and being. Why do this blessing walk? It mediates, it truly does mediate divine blessing into this seventh physical etheric plane that we're in. Because we human beings, we're half of us, they say, when they draw us the hermetic diagrams, one half of us is in the higher worlds and one half of us is in the lower worlds. The human being is the only creature that actually mediates between the higher worlds and the lower worlds, between heaven and earth, like the Christ does. And humanity is the only creature that is able to bring the higher principles down into the physical world. All the rest of the created beings lack the higher principles. They desire to have them, they desire to evolve up into them, and they will eventually through what? The gate of humanity. That is all the elementals. That is why the elemental beings, in a proper relationship with humanity, are the students and servants and the co-workers of humanity. Nature is an ally of humanity in a proper natural system. But humanity has alienated itself from nature and the nature spirits and nature beings and the animals and the birds and everything else that runs away and despises humanity in many ways too, and not just fears them. And so you are the living grail. So you are the mediator of this into the world, and you must take this seriously. What energies am I qualifying into the world? And think of yourself as a channel, as a hose. Are you going to bring muddy water in, or are you going to bring clear, healing water? You ground the higher into the lower, and you sanctify things. If you want to, everything you touch can become sanctified. It's just your attitude. It's just what you're qualifying with your heart. Everything you touch can turn to shit. Second, this kind of a blessing, like the blessing walk, and the blessing way in general, blesses and transforms your own elemental, your own body. It's a way of raising the vibrations of your flesh. We say in the liturgy, you might have heard us say for a long time, we sanctify the outer worlds as Christ's in flesh, and we help create and build the new heavens and the new earth, for we're all one body and blood and meat. And we also say, and we also say in the anamnesis, we pray to God and to be able to look at the example of the life and teaching of the Christ and listen with our hearts to the inner guidance of heaven to follow your way, O God, to imitate you, O God, and ripen into divine and perfected beings in a new, powerful, and sanctified flesh. Now, these are not just empty words. These are powerful words, and they mean powerful things. Now, a very long book could be written about this, just the blessing practice and the blessing way. Practicing the blessing way wherever you move, in everything you do, doing the dishes, sitting on the toilet, reading a book, everything is done with it. And always there's this thread of this is sacred going. It's not like the Sabbath is only on Saturday. It's every day of the week. It's every hour of the day. But it's not something that's strange and weird and strained and like old church traditions. It's a sacredness, consciousness that's there always. Because you are living the grail. Wherever you move, practicing is a bodhisattva practice that elevates your own physical etheric vibrations and better and more effectively than thousands of communion services or anything ever could. Living the blessing walk and the blessing way. The blessing way is your halakha, what the Master Jesus called your halakha, your way of walk through life, your manner of living. your way of life. And the blessing walk is an analogy to the blessing way, which is a way of living everything and all things. And none of us can live up to it. Of course we can't live up to it. We can't be perfect. We can't be conscious all the time. We can't have things under our control. But if we, it's just like meditation. When you first start, you get a single point of meditation, you focus for a little while and your mind wanders, and then you come back and your mind wanders, then you come back. And most of the time you're wandering when you start, but as you get better at it, pretty soon most of the time you're there focused and less of the time wandering. There's nothing wrong with wandering, there's nothing wrong with making mistakes, it's part of life. No one is perfect, no one can be a great blessing being at all times, but it is worth practicing it. It is a practice. Greet each person with your whole attention. Don't just look at people as sort of empty shells that you don't want to get too close to. Honor people, love people, smile at strangers, commit random senseless acts of kindness and beauty, as the bumper sticker says. Take the initiative to smile, to speak to people, to open up the heart connection. Your whole mode of relating to everything visible and invisible, as you develop the whole blessing way as a modality, you will learn to make every action word into a medium of blessing. Your physical life will become one long continuous sacrament of blessing. Because the root chakra empowerment, for the root chakra empowerment, the blessing way alone will accomplish everything. If you can live that, if you can do that as a practice, as a, what I call the blessing way, you bless everything, you send out healing at all times, this kind of thing, this alone will do more than anything else could ever do. Sleeping. Most of the practices about sleeping were given in the astral work empowerment teachings, but there are certain things you have to do with root chakra, that practices you have to start getting in the habit of. They are preparing for sleep by washing your hands, but not your face, for reasons we've explained before. You don't want to remove your magnetic aura, or magnetic, not aura, but the magnetic vibrations from your face, because when you go to sleep at night, your elemental, your body is abandoned, and you need to protect it. It's not abandoned, but it is, it's vulnerable. So the first thing is, wash your hands. And the second thing is, when you go to sleep, have your mind on something high. Don't watch some violent television show and go to sleep, or something like that. Be reading. Read something spiritual, or something of the teachings, or something like that, to go put yourself to sleep at night. Or you don't have to meditate your way into sleep, but it can be done if you're really into that. And then right before you are ready to lay down, finally to sleep, sit up in your bed and make the sign of the heptagram. Visualize it in violet lines. You start from your left foot and you go up. Om, and you make the sign completely across with the Om, and you visualize each line you're drawing as a violet, electric violet radiant thing. And when you're done, this seven-pointed star sits there, and it remains there above your body. It guards your body, it protects your body, and it establishes power at that place. It's much more powerful than a banishing pentagram or anything like that. And then when you awaken in the morning, if you awaken any time at night, if you have some kind of dream that is spiritually significant, seems to you to be spiritually significant, don't trust your memory. Write down some clues, some words about it, or something that will bring it back to your memory. Just a few words. If you wake up 4 in the morning or 2 in the morning or something like that, and there's something really significant, because you might not be able to remember when you wake up. In fact, you probably won't. These dreams don't come every night, but they come sometimes. That's very important to keep track of. The ones that you can really identify as really spiritually important. And when you awaken in the morning, one of the first things you do when you do your morning ablutions is you wash your face and your eyes with water. And that is to remove the magnetic emanations of astral and lower beings that have crowded around your body and tried to be part of the aura and so on. And then immediately after you've done these things, don't get involved in talking, making phone calls, anything. Go do your attunement and your meditation, your Iliastra meditation. And when you do that, put on the sacred round. Wear it around your heart for the meditation every morning. That's the only time you would normally wear it, is for that, in the morning. And upon arising from meditation, practice as much as you can to begin practicing the blessing way, the consciousness of blessing. And it can be done in a very intellectual way at first. You don't have to go around feeling gushy and everything and sentimental. This is not what blessing is anyway. It's not gushy and sentimental. It's a qualifying of energy which you do through visualization and will, goodwill, and you visualize golden energy. Blessing comes out of your heart. If I wish to bless this water, if I want to make holy water, I can put it by my heart. I can hold it in the nacham position, which is with the right hand holding it, the left hand above it. I visualize this golden energy all around the heart, and the heart chakra, just permeating this water. And I do something with the throat, anything. I can say, I bless you, or you can go, Aum, or you can do whatever you want. Throat, sound has to be done, and you best close the eyes and visualize this. When you're done, you have made little undines very happy, because they got a back rub. They got something beautiful here. And as I say, they're not in here like bacteria. Rather, this is in them. It's in another dimension. We can't visualize how it is, but it is, believe me, it is there. And the last category is meditation. You must wear the temple talisman whenever you do your morning meditation. Also, other meditations, December 31st, if you join with us on that. Group meditations, any other kinds of temple empowerments, temple ordinations, WESAC initiations, at those times we wear them. And we wear these things at the temple meetings when we do temple work. So we need to bring them each week. Now the communion conjunction or merging meditation practice. And this is something that we all need to work on. And we've all had some experience of. And I have experimented with myself in certain ways. And I've been successful in other ways. And it's possible to work with elementals other than the grail elemental spirits, which we worked with and invoke with the round, the sacred round. We don't have to be great magesses to invoke them. They're there to work with us. But it's possible to develop yourself to work with any elementals in any place and any time, and with other egregors and things like this, only by mastering the technique of merging or conjuncting or unifying and becoming one with the matrix of the elementals with which you wish to work. A tree, for example, is a physical plane matrix for certain elementals known as dryads, and a forest for sylvesters and ducei and fauns and so on. To communicate with these other dimensional beings, you have to establish an ego communion, that is an I sense with their matrices. You have to merge with them. That you have to either bring them into you as part of your own consciousness or put yourself into them as part of your own consciousness. Now, in a communing meditation, the personal ego consciousness of your particular meditation, that is the I that you are at the moment of that deep meditation, engulfs, absorbs, and flows outward into a given object or matrix or pulls it inward into you. How it's accomplished or how it's visualized varies with individuals. Basically, there are two ways of doing it. There's what I call the intaking communion and the outflowing communion. And one will work for you. And one of the ways you can get an idea of what will work best for you is to analyze when we begin the temple. If you visualize your ego consciousness up here in your head, and you can visualize taking it down here into your chest, and you can visualize being in your chest, and that's where you are, and looking around from inside the chest, and you're able to descend into your heart. If you're able to conjoin the head and the heart by descending, then you are an intaking communion type of person. That's the kind of communion you would use. If you are a person like me who is better at raising the consciousness of the heart up into the head and then looking out through the heart and the head, and we do both things. We descend here and come up. But one of them is what's really effective for you. One of them is the way you join your head and your heart really way. And if it is for you by lifting the heart up into the head, and that's how you get them unified, then the outflowing communion is for you. Basically, the technique is written here in the manual. When you do this, you go out into nature somewhere. Don't do this with animals or human beings, only with plants or minerals. Mineral and vegetable world, you do these communions with. black magicians do them with animals. They gain power over animals. They get so they can control animals in this way. But they do it for their willfulness, and there's real dangers in merging with animals and real dangers in merging with other human beings at this stage in our development. So we stay with the vegetable and mineral. And mineral is really the greatest merging, because a mineral sits at the highest level of reality. The mineral world is the highest reality expression in the world. It basically has its roots in the causal plane, whereas the vegetable world has its roots in the mental plane. But you sit comfortably somewhere in nature. Say you're going to do a communion with a pond or a lake or the ocean or with a boulder or with a mountain or with something like this. You don't want to get too close to what you're going to do communion with, because one of the keys you're going to have is your subtle senses of smell and taste, your tactile senses, which smell and taste are part of the tactile, in a sense. They're part of your most intimate ways of relating to things, not sight and not hearing, but touch, taste, and smell, feeling. So you don't want to get so close that you will actually get physical smells or physical tastes from something, because that will confuse your ability to discriminate. You have to be far enough away from something that the taste and the touch won't be confused by gross taste and touch things. So at least a couple of arm lengths away, and preferably much farther than that if you can. And you can commune, therefore, with stars and with the sun and with the moon and things like that. What you do is, if you're doing an intaking communion, you breathe slowly in and out through your left nostril. Your left nostril is the feminine channel, the feminine nadi. It's the intaking nadi. It's the one that will make you open and being able to merge. Like this, you just plug the right one like this, and you can put your, I would, when I do things like this, I would put my left hand over my heart and use my right hand to plug. And you breathe, but you look passively, very passively, but very intently at the object of communion, the target, so to speak, a tree or whatever it is. You examine every detail, and you imagine the feel or texture of the object, and you admire it, and you appreciate it, and you love the beauty of it, while you're breathing through this left nostril. And you do this until you can start to subtly smell or taste or touch. So you start to actually get sensations that are the intimate sensations of smell, taste, and touch for the object. And it may not take long. It may take a long time. And when that happens, then, when you have a clear, subtle tactile or olfactory or taste sensations of this, doing this with breathing through this one nostril, then you become aware. You look at the entire thing. You look at the whole thing. It's kind of like looking at it with your eyes and with your mind's eye. You want to see the whole thing, not just a part of it. But you can't see it maybe with your whole eye at once, but you can imagine it in the periphery of your vision and everything. The whole thing, you sort of get this holistic view of the whole thing out of both central and peripheral vision, and then you unplug the nostril and you inhale the object through both nostrils while you're looking with this view that's both central and peripheral vision. You inhale through both nostrils in long, slow in-breaths, and you hold them in for several seconds. You hold them. Now, when you hold a breath in, don't go plugged up like that. You hold it in like this without stopping off the solar plexus, without putting these muscles in. The muscles will stop like that. You don't want those muscles. You want just holding it open, like you're holding lungs open when you're holding the breath. And then, and while you're doing that, you sense your way into the object that you're, you sense your way into the taste and the smell and the feel of the object. And while you're inhaling the object, and then while you're holding the breath and doing this, then you close your eyes, and while you're holding this breath in, you sense your way into the object, and then you slowly, slowly exhale, ending in a hum. You repeat this several times until you feel something complete about it, and then you just close your eyes and you sit in the Iliaster meditation until you start to achieve this ego consciousness with me. Now you can close your eyes or you can open your eyes at this point, whatever you are. Some people are better with open eyes, some with closed eyes. Open eyes sometimes distract you and pull you away. If they do, you'll find out. Now if you're an outflowing communion person like I am, you do the same thing, but you breathe in and out your right nostril. And what you do is you imagine yourself flowing out towards the matrix. You're in your imagination, you're getting closer and closer and more intimate with it. And then you finally imagine yourself as very small and crawling on the object, all around the object. And you imagine yourself, you put yourself in imagination on the object, crawling all around it. And then you imagine yourself as becoming permeable, and you can crawl through it and go through it. And then when you fit yourself inside it, you expand yourself until you're the whole form and shape of the whole being. So you're projecting yourself out into the object, and this way you're projecting your consciousness. And then do the same thing with your eyes. When you're doing these long, slow breaths,